Good afternoon. I want to welcome everyone to the Texas Library Association webinar, Have School Libraries Been Stamped with an Expiration Date? A look at how students see IT or us. Our speaker today is Marty Rossi of Education Service Center 20. Again, I want to remind everyone that to both see and hear the webinar, it will be necessary to dial in toll-free to our conference call at 866-740-1260. And use the access code for today, 414-6650. If you have any problems seeing or hearing today's webinar, please contact the ReadyTalk support line toll-free at 800-843-9166. That's 800-843-9166. Everyone will receive an evaluation survey after the program today. We really appreciate your comments. TLA is still fairly new to the webinar business, and we look very carefully at those reviews, especially your suggestions for future webinar topics. We find those incredibly useful. Continuing education certificates will be available tomorrow, February 25th, at the TLA CE website, txla.org/CE. The recorded webinar will be available next week at the same website. To minimize background noise, we'll be asking everyone to mute their phone by pressing star 6 to mute. You may unmute your phone later by pressing star 7. If you have a question, please note the raise hand button on your screen, or you can type questions to us via the chat box. And if you are tweeting about today's webinar, please note the Twitter hashtag will be #TLAWeb. #TLAWeb. And now, before we begin, I'd like to introduce our speaker for today. Martha Rossi is a Library Services and Media Specialist at Education Service Center 20 in San Antonio and a member of the Tall Texans Class of 2010. Marty?
Good afternoon, and welcome to everyone. I'm pleased and humbled to be with you today to talk about whether school libraries have been stamped with an expiration date. Primarily, we'll be taking a look at, let me go back here just one second, we'll be taking a look at the speak up data that was collected in 2009. And before we get into those details, what I would like to do, however, is get a little bit of feedback from you as to what type of technology user you consider yourself. And so the poll question is actually, when comparing yourself to your peers, which response describes you best as a tech user? Are you an advanced user where you consider yourself more expert than most of your peers? Are you an average user, about the same as the rest of your peers? Or would you consider yourself a beginning user, maybe less developed than most of your peers? And I'll give everyone a moment to go ahead and respond to that. Thanks also to those of you that are responding via the chat window. If that's your preference, that's certainly an option as well. Well, I can see that so far it looks like we're evenly divided between advanced and average tech users. I know it's a tough question to answer sometimes. It's subjective and depends on how you're feeling that day. Well, that's a good point too, Sherry. It certainly does depend on your peers as far as the response to the poll is concerned. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on. And let me talk a little bit here about the Speak Up survey itself and the specific results that we're going to take a look at here during this webinar. For those of you that may not be familiar, the Speak Up survey is a research project conducted by Project Tomorrow, which is a nonprofit organization, as the slide says, to promote dialogue about educational issues. And I invite you, when you have a moment after the webinar, to visit their site at www.tomorrow.org to discover all kinds of information regarding the surveys that have been conducted since 2003. You'll see that responses from Texas schools also figure very prominently in their results. Many of their reports are freely available online, and the data from previous surveys as well. So it's a very interesting site and a wonderful resource. The advantage and the topic for this webinar is due to the fact that in the fall of 2009, Project Tomorrow partnered with TLA in order to include additional questions to the Speak Up 2009 survey. And in this case, these questions were meant to gather data specific to student use of school libraries in Texas. So this was really a rare opportunity. The survey itself, those questions were directed to Texas students in grades 6 through 8. The questions were about library use, technology literacy, and their perceptions of technology instruction, as well as what types of technology instruction they would like to receive. Approximately 22,000 or so surveys were submitted, and those are the results that we're going to be looking at, and kind of maybe also talking a little bit about what these survey results, what kind of thoughts these might prompt in my head as well as yours. One of the questions that was posed to students is, what resources do you use in the library at your school? And you can see from the chart, I use the computer lab received the largest number of responses at 34%. The use of online databases and online books received 17% and 19% of responses respectively. And 23% of the responses fell under the choice of conducting internet research for school projects. Collectively, though, the majority of the responses involved online tools and internet use. So to me, it follows that students' choice to use a library is affected by decisions that you make about facilitating the access to digital information, and then the decisions that you make about the integration of digital tools and information through the library program. Oh, clearly, having an appropriate number of well-functioning computers and devices with internet access is pretty critical to library program success. So I've remarked in nearly every library I've visited in the last several years, no matter the type, whether it's school, public, or an academic library, an overwhelming majority of those people in the library, if not all, were working on a computer or internet device. And I'm sure you've probably had the same experience. So let's assume, however, that there's an adequate number of computing devices in your library, and that when they're not in the physical library, students have computing devices they can use. And let's concentrate instead on the more important role that those devices play, really as connectors to strong library programs. So here's one of the questions that I'd like you to ponder. From a student's perspective, how findable is the library and its digital resources? In your experience, at your school, your campus, your district, or your region? Is there an easily located library online presence? And is there a findable and user-friendly website of some kind? And then I want to talk a little bit about what findable and user-friendly might be in this case, because, again, we're thinking here from a student's perspective. So when it comes to the library's online presence, a consideration to students' online user experience is important. So use what you know and what you observe about student information-seeking behaviors. What types of things attract them the most? How is information presented to them in the best way? And here are some things to think about. Our student users, we know, think mainly in terms of content. So an example there might be, I need information on Abraham Lincoln. Or I've got to find out what possible or what people thought of Harper Lee's writing. Or maybe they're thinking, I'd like to see how a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. Whereas on our end, we don't necessarily think in terms of content. We think more maybe in terms of containers, books, databases, periodicals, ebooks, newspapers, etc. And I'm thinking that even professional practitioners in the real world have access to online portals that are arranged around a subject. Let's say PubMed, for example, those in the medical community, maybe the Web of Science would be another example for scientists. So it's not just students that think in terms of content. So instead of subject portals that are arranged around topics that our students are interested in or have to research, I've noticed when I surf the web and look at school library online websites and different types of online presence, I see that we tend to give our students publisher portals rather than subject portals that are arranged, our publisher portals are arranged around vendor brands more likely. So I'm going to ask you to consider, after today's webinar, give some thought to whether there's a gap between what students want and need and what we're giving them as far as the library online presence is concerned. And think about how you could improve the findability, the integration, and the use of digital resources on your website, on any wikis you use, even through your library catalog, for example. So the graphic I'm showing you now, this image here, look at this and remember that based on the survey responses, if we remember that student choice tends strongly towards digital tools and resources, then embrace the fact that your influence on meaningful blending of technology into library program activities can really result in positive influence on student engagement and learning. I would encourage you to, during these activities, while you're thinking about how might I blend technology with the library program in your collaborations with other educators on your campuses, that you record evidence of student progress as you go along. The type of thing that I'd suggest you use is consider maybe brief online polls that you could use with students as pre- and post-assessment tools. Maybe you could record a video of student performance on some type of task assignment or activity that you've come up with. Keep copies of student work that's created in whatever format that might be. Collect teacher testimonials regarding those collaborative partnerships when you've integrated technology. And document, so that you can utilize this information to continually promote your program and demonstrate how you are blending and impacting student learning at your library. So another question that was posed to students during this survey was, how often do you use the technology in your school? And this is a general question. How often do you use the technology in your school, anywhere in your school? So you'll see that about 20% responded that technology is available to me when I need it. And about the same number responded that they use technology not very often, unfortunately. And then you'll see that 13%, a lower number, indicate that they use technology in the library or the computer lab. Now, the remaining number indicated that they use technology in the classroom. So if you're wondering where the rest of the responses fell, that would be it. One of the possible takeaways here, though, is that school libraries aren't necessarily seen by students as technological hubs for access to information. So you might consider how you can gauge if that's the perspective at your school, and if it is, what you might do to change that perspective so that the library is seen as a more integral component of the campus and student learning and use of technology. Let me go ahead and pause and ask another question at this point. You'll see the second of our polls in front of you. The question here is, how important is the effective implementation of instructional technology to your student success? So what are your beliefs related to this issue? Extremely important. Is the effective implementation of instructional technology just important, somewhat important, or not important? Well, we can certainly see here that it's not surprising that the audience for this webinar sees instructional technology as very important. So I'm pleased to see that, and hopefully the information that you're receiving today is useful to you and will provide some food for thought going forward. Let's take a look at another question that was posed to students. In this case, the question was, how do you learn technology applications, like how to use digital technology, create presentations, safely use the internet, or develop websites? And you'll see again from the responses here that approximately 21% said that they learned these skills in a technology applications or technology literacy course. About 22% responded that they learned these skills as part of regular content area classes. And you'll see about 20% responded that they learned these skills in the school library. So I would say that you could see responses were evenly split across those categories. However, a majority of the responses indicated that students really believe they learn these skills on their own from their parents or other family members. And I would say that these numbers are really an indicator of a larger trend because students really through the use of digital tools, they have no qualms about playing a stronger role in their own learning. And a 2010 Project Tomorrow report indicates that K-12 students are increasingly taking responsibility for their own learning and really defining their own education path. And they specified, and I quote, that they define this path through alternative sources and feeling not just a right, but a responsibility for creating personalized learning experiences. And so you'll see a citation for this report on the bottom of this slide. This particular report is called Creating Our Future, students speak up about their vision for 21st century learning. And you'll see the URL there with a link to the report. And if you're not able to access this particular specific URL, you can easily find the report on the tomorrow.org website. So the report goes on to say that students are, and again I quote, seeking out other students for collaborations, information sharing, and tutoring via Facebook, taking online assessments and tests to evaluate their own status in the knowledge acquisition process, using cell phone applications for self-organization and increased productivity, taking online classes not for a grade, but to learn more about subjects that interest them, accessing podcasts and videos to help in classes that they're struggling in, and finding experts, including other students, to connect with online to exchange new ideas and explore content in a myriad of new ways. So the question that, again, I would pose to you here, here's the food for thought question based on these survey results is, do students have multiple opportunities to explore, discover, evaluate, and apply new information using different types of technology tools that are facilitated, again, through your decisions about the library program? I think we have to remember that when it comes to students' development of these personal learning experiences that the report referred to, school libraries are really competing with some serious substitutes for our students' attention. And although librarians, we work to make technology available in the library, and we consider ourselves experts in introducing and teaching the responsible use of digital technologies for learning, the survey responses indicate that students really do not generally look to school librarians for this type of guidance. I know this is really something we're not necessarily going to be able to resolve during this webinar, but I hope that you'll take the time to think about this and what role the school library plays in students' personal learning experiences. And if this is especially important in the light of the responses that students supply to the next question. You'll see here that students were asked, when do you use the resources in the library at your school? And you will see that a full 50% responded that they either only use the library once in a while or not often at all. So what steps can we take to transform these responses? And luckily, there were some other questions posed to students that provided some insight on how we might provide the types of activities and tools and information that students are looking for. So one of the other questions on the survey that I want to highlight for you is students were asked, if you could create the ideal technology class at your school, what would be the top five things that you would like to learn in that class? So the top five things basically boiled into categories like creating websites, building online games and simulations, creating and editing videos. And surprisingly, many students indicated they want to learn about protecting themselves from viruses and spam. And they added internet research because I think students experience quite a bit of frustration with the way they search on the internet right now. And we can talk about that a little bit more as we move forward through the information. But first, I kind of wanted to cover these five categories with you and mention a few specific tools that you may or may not be familiar with. The first one in the category of creating websites, I'd like to mention Weebly, specifically Weebly for Education, and you can access that site at the URL on the slide, students.weebly.com, and it's a very easy, user-friendly way to create websites. I'd also like to remind everyone, in case it slipped your mind or you were unaware, Wikispaces is still at this point providing free wikis at the first paid level to educators. So you could get the actual, I believe it's a $50 cost wiki at no charge. So you get a few extra features as educators. And using a wiki as a website, helping students understand what a wiki is, its collaborative nature, how information can be organized, is the type of information that students are asking for skill development in. Another tool that you could look at, of course, is Google Sites, particularly if you have Google Apps for Education implemented on your campus or district. So those are just three tools out of many, but just a suggestion to you on some that you could take a look at. When it comes to creating online games and simulations, I came across this tool not too long ago, so I just wanted to share it with you as a possible tool you may want to investigate, Sharendipity. It's at beta.sharendipity.com, and it gives you some options for creating custom tools, online quizzes, games, and also some widget creation is included here. So I would invite you to investigate this on behalf of your students to see if it's a tool that you might integrate somehow into collaborations with educators and into your library program. Now, as far as helping students develop their skills on protecting themselves online, what I would suggest here is use your mad librarian skills to educate yourself on the topic of viruses and assorted malware and how to prevent it. There are all kinds of resources to accomplish this, and we're seasoned professionals and can educate ourselves in that category so that we can turn around and filter the information and provide it for our students depending on their level and grade. And as far as video creation tools are concerned, I want to recommend that you visit the Free Technology for Teachers site at freetech4teachers.com. Richard Byrne does a wonderful job of evaluating resources, and his blog is a great resource I would recommend to you, well beyond just the video creation resources that I'm indicating here. So this one's really a double whammy and a wonderful site to visit. So I hope that you will do that. Now, as far as internet research is concerned, students' request for skill development in that area, of course, I would be remiss if I didn't remind everyone that we have the state-funded K-12 databases available to us to help assist with skill development in internet research. Authoritative tools, comparing for students the difference between searching in the databases versus searching the open web, alleviating some of the frustration that they experience online by teaching them how to be better Google users. I have a little bit of a screen grab of the advanced Google search to remind everyone that that section of Google exists, helping students to create search strategies, understand kind of how Boolean searching might be translated into a search strategy. And overall, just giving them a little more control over the crazy millions of Google result lists that they get with random searches that have not been well thought out. You'll notice I also included Wikipedia here because I think we need to understand how Wikipedia works, and we need to participate in helping teachers and students understand how Wikipedia works, how it fits into the information and research landscape, what its role is, and best ways to leverage it. I've included YouTube here because it's quickly becoming a student's favorite search engine, which is really completely understandable because students are so visually oriented that it's so much easier to locate information in a video and have it shown to me as opposed to having to struggle through evaluating a lot of text. So let me pose another food for thought question. Is the library perceived as an indispensable learning space? And here I'm referring to both the physical and the virtual library. So how can we influence the outcome of this question? And so let me go back to what I was referring to earlier about students in the digital generation, and I kind of alluded to the fact that they are really more visual. But I want to talk a little bit more about shifting your own perspective a little bit and thinking about how you're building the online presence for the library. Again, not because this is appeasing students. It's really more about communicating and connecting so more effective learning can take place. So when we're directing information towards students, here are a few things to remember. Because students have been bombarded by visual imagery and stimuli since birth, there's a lot of research and documentation that really indicates students just think and process information differently than we do. They have very good visual spatial skills, and so they're going to process visual information, video, pictures, as well as audio. And what this does is kind of relegates text to a supplemental role as far as digital students are concerned. We actually tend to think the other way around. We think of the image as the supplementary information that goes along with all the text. So consider shifting perspective a little bit there based on that information when you are developing and creating your online spaces. The other thing that I would suggest is to remember that there's also some research out there that indicates to us students tend to read, especially online, in an F pattern. So they're going to focus their attention more towards the upper left-hand corner of a web page, whereas we tend to read closer to a Z pattern. So if we know that they prefer to work with visual information and the reading patterns they utilize, the prime real estate on a website directed towards students is going to be the upper left-hand corner, and that's or upper left-hand area, and that's where I'm going to want to put pictures and video and keep text messages very brief. Also, keep in mind that what you put on the right side of a web page might really even be largely ignored by students. It just depends on what you put there. But the F pattern is that the research indicates quite prominently that is the trend. So I want to pass on yet a few more ideas here about as a result of what I've thought about in going through the survey data is to remember that libraries are really about helping students reach their full potential.
Marty?
Yes.
Before you keep going, we just had a couple questions on the chat box.
Yes.
Last topic. Was that S as in Sam or F as in Frank for the student pattern on web pages?
Oh, thank you. Let me go ahead and clarify. It is definitely an F pattern. So F as in Frank.
Okay. Thanks. We had a couple people ask about that, so I wanted to clear that up before we went on.
No problem. So if we think about your role, particularly in this concept or idea that libraries are about helping students reach their fullest potential, that what can you do? My recommendation here is that a manageable, and I underline the word manageable, self-development plan is really critical here. I would encourage you to not let any anxiety over technology distract you from this larger goal that it is about helping students. I would ask you to be selective on your decisions about how to integrate technology and base it on user needs that you're aware of, and make sure that the library's mission includes a component related to integrating instructional technology. And I emphasize instructional technology rather than just technology itself, because it's not about the tool. It's about what the tool enables students to do, so the learning that can happen as a result. Think about carefully what you're willing to bite off and chew, and figure out a scope for yourself, reasonable goals. Maybe you want to choose to become more knowledgeable in a particular area of technology integration. So, for example, we know a lot of our colleagues have concentrated a lot of wonderful work and effort on the creation of book trailers and the tools used in order to do that. And so as a community, it's wonderful to know that we have experts that know more about those tools and their implementation that we can rely on, so the rest of us don't have to be gurus about everything. And really, in this day and age, that's an impossibility. With the exponential growth of information, it is simply impossible to stay up to date and abreast of every technology tool out there. So again, be selective based on your user needs, and know that you have a network of colleagues that you can rely on to discover information where you might have a gap or two that you need to fill. But I would also encourage at the same time to maintain kind of a basic awareness of the other tools that are out there, of trends that are going on. But keep it manageable. Always keep it manageable. What's okay, what you think you can handle. Now, I want to provide some other information to you and suggest a couple of more tools for instructional technology integration, and suggest to you that depending on the circumstance at your campus or district, these may or may not apply to you. I'd like to suggest you may want to review the 2010 Horizon Report, specifically the K-12 edition. There's a wonderful summary. There's a section in that report that relates to key trends. And there's also a section relating to challenges and how we might be able to overcome the challenges, the major challenges that are identified. But in the report, it's specified that technology is increasingly a means for empowering students. And so, again, I recommend that you go take a look at that. And Ruth, I totally agree. She added a wonderful comment in the chat about make sure that we as librarians show our role and relevance to the instruction and academic achievement process. Absolutely. And I would reiterate my comment earlier about documenting evidence of precisely that, your role and relevance to the instruction and academic achievement process. Along those lines, there is another project going on out there that hopefully most of you have already heard about. And if you have not, I would encourage that you find out more about it. TEA has a strong support behind the Project Share effort. And hopefully many of you already have a Project Share account and you've been using it. If you do not yet know your Project Share account or don't think you have one, please discover who the Project Share contact is at your district and find out what your username and password is. Project Share is going to be a very important platform for all of us to become comfortable working in because as TEA moves away from print-based materials because of cost, largely because of cost, but also because we're moving into the digital realm altogether. But TEA will be conducting more and more professional development, rollout of programs and services through the Project Share site. Teachers are being encouraged to create group, build groups, and ultimately create courses in Project Share. Project Share is an example of an online learning management system, and I think it is critical that librarians have a role in that landscape. Where do librarians fit in with learning management systems? More and more learning is moving online. Are you familiar with learning management systems like Moodle, like Blackboard? Have you participated in any online courses as librarians by providing resources supporting the online course instructors? Those are all questions that I would pose to you and say that we're a little bit behind the curve here, and I don't see a lot of librarian presence in the online courses that are currently going on. I hope it's just because I haven't been made aware of those circumstances and not because there's a dearth of those circumstances. The Texas Virtual School Network is another resource that you could take a look at. And I would also take a look at different types of tools and widgets that you could use in order to integrate library resources into online course management systems. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. For example, if I'm a student and I'm taking an online course, it might very well benefit me to have an integrated search box inside my Moodle or Blackboard or Project Share course that leads me directly to the library catalog or library online subscription databases that are subscribed to. So this is another example of your library presence in the digital realm. Another suggestion that I would make is to please be aware of the standards. The newly revised English Language Arts and Reading Standards include a research strand. Please make yourselves familiar with that strand and the remainder of the content area standards as they are being revised. There are all kinds of connections that we as librarians can make. I would also encourage that you familiarize yourself and be aware of the college and career readiness standards. There are more connections there for us, to pinpoint and work with each other. I would also recommend that you take a look at the technology application standards draft. Those TechEP standards are currently being revised. They're being revised to be more in line with ISTE's National Education Technology Standards. So we have more potential for connections there. As far as your particular involvement outside of the library, I have some suggestions for you there as well. I don't see in my travels around the state when we're presenting at different types of conferences about the state-funded K-12 databases program, I don't see a lot of sessions presented by librarians. So I would encourage you, to submit sessions when they're available to the Texas Association of Secondary School Principals, TASP, the Texas Elementary Principals and Supervisors Association, TEPSA. Take a look at submitting a proposal to the Texas Association of School Administrators Midwinter Conference. It takes place in January or February every year in Austin. And take heart, even if you submit a proposal and it's refused. Try again. It really is important for librarians to have a presence at these types of conferences. We do a great job of advocating with ourselves, but we need to do a better job at making our presence and our connections to instruction known outside library land. I would also kind of want to mention to you that while you're thinking about these types of strategies and how the library relates and how you collaborate with educators, think about strategies that are going to hold up well in times of uncertainty, because that's what we're dealing with right now. And make sure that you're aware of ongoing trends. And a specific trend that I'd like to mention are digital textbooks and online materials. Many of you may already be aware that TEA put out a call for supplemental science materials. This is, of course, as a result of the science text having been revised. A call for supplemental science materials has been put out because a standard textbook proclamation for print materials related to science has been shelved, tabled. That will not occur. So the supplemental science materials request that TEA has put out is specific to online materials only. So this is the first time that we'll be going through an adoption process for a content area where only online materials will be reviewed and adopted. And so who better than librarians to help campuses, schools, districts, and educators in general deal with that landscape, electronic resources, how to manage them, how to evaluate them. So this is another potential connection for you. Now, before I stop talking and entertain your questions, there's one more poll that I inserted in the webinar materials that I'd like to pose to you. I ask at this point, because I know that we are all strapped for time, but I think it's important. So I'm asking you to pledge to spend at least 15 minutes each day working with digital tools and developing technology and integration goals and activities. And so I'll ask you at this point to indicate your willingness to do that and hope that you're able to do that going forward. That's great. What an overwhelming response. That's a terrific thing. The other thing that I'd like to do is mention to you that I invite you to continue this conversation and to include more voices than just my own. This is something that we all need to become involved in. And so what I plan to do is start some conversations over on the discussion board in my TLA, specifically in the TASL, the Texas Association of School Librarians online community. So I have already posted the first discussion question to the TASL group, and I invite all of you to join me there, and let's continue the conversation and help ourselves move forward on this and make progress and do wonderful things. Before I finish or stop talking again, I wanted to mention quickly that I have added some additional resources, and this will, of course, be on the recorded version of the webinar, so you can refer to this later. The URL to the Project Tomorrow website, as well as another website that I didn't have much time to mention, but I do encourage that you go and take a look at it. It's called Power On Texas. And this is another TEA initiative, this website. A lot of the material there has been as a result of Speak Up survey results for the past several years that have indicated that students really feel that they need to power down when they get to school each morning. And they feel as though they kind of hit a wall and are not able to learn the way that they would prefer. So there are many resources, a lot of research, and good information at the Power On Texas website. So I would suggest and recommend that you go visit that. The other site that I'd like to recommend is the 21st Century Fluency Project as another source you could use to educate yourself. This is Ian Jukes' website, and you'll find it at www.committedsardine.com. He's got some wonderful information on his site, and you can subscribe to the feed for the Committed Sardine blog and stay up to date on what's going on there. I would also suggest that you take a look at the National Education Technology Plan. It's been recently released. You don't have to wade through the whole thing. There's a nice summary available at the website that I've provided. And because we're working with online resources and we have access to the Professional Development Collection, I selected one article for you out of a recent issue of Computers and Libraries, one of my favorite publications that we can get to through the Professional Development Collection. In this case, an article called Preparing for the Long-Term Digital Future of Libraries, authored by Marshall Breeding. And so I've included the persistent link there for you to be able to access that article and see if you can find some information that you can apply to your practice. So at this time, I'd like to invite you to type in any questions you might have in the chat box, feedback, comments, and I'll give you a minute to do that, and we'll be happy to respond. I'm also going to let you know that you're more than welcome to contact me if you would like. You can always reach me either through the TLA, my TLA discussion questions that we'll be addressing on the TAFL discussion group, or you can email me directly, and my email address is now showing on screen. And you can always, of course, reach me also as well through the state-funded K-12 databases website because I sit right across from Michelle, and so any calls that you get through to her through the help desk, she can easily transfer to me if necessary.
Marty, we have a question coming in. Did I understand correctly that the supplemental science materials are up for adoption must be digital resources?
Yes, Terry, that is absolutely correct. The request for supplemental science materials are required to be online materials only. And TEA, actually today is the deadline for publishers to submit for high school materials. And TEA will be providing a review site where individuals, campuses and districts, and those evaluating the science materials will be able to access and make choices about what materials they'll be adopting.
Thank you, Marty. If anybody has any other questions, please don't hesitate to type them to us via the chat window in the lower left-hand corner of your screen, or you can raise your hand electronically with the raise hand button, and we will call on you. Any further questions for Marty? well. Looks like you did a good job of covering everything.
Here's a question.
Links to the articles.
Absolutely. We'll put that right back up there.
And we'll share the slides as well as the recording on the recording page, so people won't have to listen to the I'm sure they aspire to listen to the entire recording to review all the material, but they'll also be able just to zip to the URL directly. Any other questions for Marty today? But lots of thanks for information, guidance, and encouragement.
Oh, wonderful.
And I'll just real quick put up Marty's contact information one more time. She's at Education Service Center Region 20 down in San Antonio. Her email address is martha.rossi@esc20.net, and she can also be reached at 210-370-5711. You've been listening to Have School Libraries Been Stamped with an Expiration Date, a look at how students see it or us or IT based on the Speak Up survey. Our special thanks to Marty Rossi, as well as members of TLA who helped with this webinar, Nan Ellis, our registration coordinator, Marianne Emerson, our webmaster, Gloria Moraz is director of communications here, Ilea Hershey is our membership and meetings associate, and she handled chat today. Thank you so much, Ilea. And I'm Ted Warner, your CE specialist and your host for the webinar series. Our special thanks also goes out to ReadyTalk.com, our webinar platform. Please remember that continuing education certificates may be printed tomorrow, February 25th, on our TLA CE website, txla.org/CE. Recordings will be available next week at the same website. Please complete the evaluation survey immediately following the webinar. We value your comments very much. And before we go, I also want to mention that we have other upcoming webinars. We have one on assessing your library services on March 3rd, strategic planning on March 10th, and using annual reports to make the case for your library on March 24th. Those are all premium webinars by Dr. Julie Todaro, and registration and more information is available at txla.org/CE. She will also be doing a reprise of her management and supervision webinar on March 28th. And again, more information at txla.org/CE. If you have any questions about the webinar series or this specific webinar, please don't hesitate to contact me at the information on your screen, tedw@txla.org, or by phone at 800-580-2852. Again, we want to thank everyone for attending today, and thank you so much, Marty Rossi.
Oh, and thanks to everyone for your kind words, and I look forward to continuing the conversation. Thanks very much.
See everybody online. Have a good week.